Let us gently open this window from these windows to the past, to the enchanting warble of the nightingales. And yet better, to the melody of human voice, chanting these exalted words from the tablet of Ahmad.
وبه يفصل الحق الباطل.
He is the king, the all-knowing, the wise. Lo, the nightingale of paradise singeth upon the twigs of the tree of eternity with holy and sweet melodies, proclaiming to the sincere ones the glad tidings of the nearness of God, calling the believers in the divine unity to the court of the presence of the generous one. Verily, this is that most great beauty foretold in the books of the messengers, through whom truth shall be distinguished from error, and the wisdom of every command shall be tested. O Ahmad, forget not my bounties while I am absent. Remember my days during thy days and my distress and banishment in this remote prison, and be thou so steadfast in my love that thy heart shall not waver, even if the swords of the enemies rain blows upon thee, and all the heavens and the earth arise against thee. Be thou as a flame of fire to my enemies and a river of life eternal to my loved ones. And be not of those who doubt. Was Ahmad truly a flame of fire and a river of life eternal? Indeed, he was the embodiment of both. How else could it be? When Baha'u'llah uttered the word be, he became. The combination of fire and water, that unquenchable fire was the magic of Ahmad. The phrase, flame of fire, could mistakenly give the impression of a destructive power given by Baha'u'llah to Ahmad. He did not become a flame-throwing torch destroying the enemies like the plague Moses brought to Egyptians. Baha'u'llah, on his declaration day, a few years before revelation of the tablet of Ahmad, forbade the use of sword. Those allegorical words of the tablet of Ahmad made him the unique believer whose life story you're going to hear. The flame of fire was nothing but the force of his unshakable faith and the fire of his zeal with which he burnt away the veils of ignorance, and when subdued, he warmed their calloused and cold hearts with the warmth of his love. The story of the tablet of Ahmad and its only recipient, which you are about to hear, is mostly extracted and in part directly quoted from an article by the late hand of the cause, Janabe Abul Ghasim Feizi, which appeared in the March-April issue of the Baha'i News in 1967. There are two tablets, each bearing the name of Ahmad, one in Persian and the other in Arabic. The latter is the one used throughout the Baha'i world, which the Guardian characterized as being imbued with a special potency. You might be curious to learn a little about the miserable and unfortunate Ahmad, the recipient of the Persian tablet, which is quite long. Selections from this tablet appear in the Gleanings from the Writings of Baha'u'llah, page 323. This Ahmad was born in Kashan. In that city, the first to embrace the faith of the Bab through no less a person than Mullah Hussein was Haji Mirza Jani, in whose home the Bab spent Nowruz of 1847, and he was martyred in 1852 bloodbath of Tehran. Haji had three brothers. One never was moved by the faith and died as a Muslim. The second was called Ismail, entitled by Baha'u'llah as Zabih, meaning sacrifice, and also Anis, meaning companion. This brother Ismail was the recipient of Surah Ra'is by Baha'u'llah, admonishing Ali Pasha, the Prime Minister of Turkish Empire. He died of natural causes, but so much he had yearned to be a martyr that Baha'u'llah conferred the title of Zabih upon him. He should not be confused with Sayyid Ismail Zawari, also titled Zabih by Baha'u'llah, who saw a glimpse of glory and sacrificed himself by cutting his own throat. Two Ismails and two titles of Zabih. According to Baha'u'llah, Abraham was going to sacrifice his firstborn Ishmael as a proof of his faith. It is interesting to see in the history of religion three Ismails whose names are associated with sacrifice. We were talking about Mirza Jani of Kashan, whose one brother stayed a Muslim, one was Ismail, and the third one was Ahmad, who went to Baghdad and attained the presence of Baha'u'llah. When Baha'u'llah left Baghdad after his declaration, he left one Ahmad behind and chose the other Ahmad to accompany him to Istanbul. You should also realize that Sayyid Muhammad Isfahani, the mind behind Mirza Yahya's evil deed, also accompanied Baha'u'llah. When our star, Ahmad, begged Baha'u'llah to go with him, he was told by Baha'u'llah that he was taking some followers with him to keep an eye on them. The unfortunate Ahmad, in the storm of tests and trials, departed from the right path and sided with Mirza Yahya. That is when Baha'u'llah revealed the Persian tablet of Ahmad for him to warn him against such evil deed which he was committing, causing great suffering for Baha'u'llah and his family. The miserable Ahmad stayed unchanged and went back to Baghdad, where he found his old associates. He lived a wicked life. One of his worst habits was to insult and curse people in the most bitter and foul language. In one of his disputes with his evil friends, he lashed them with his sharp tongue, and so one night they got rid of him by killing him. Now we go to the Ahmad in whose honor the well-known tablet was revealed in Arabic. He was born in Yazd, a southern city in Iran, about 1805 to a very noble and rich family. His father and uncles were the chieftains of town, but Ahmad, even at the age of 14, showed a great inclination towards mysticism and endeavor to find new path to truth. When he was 15, he had already started his investigations, during which he heard from some of the people that they were saints and holy men who knew special prayers, which if read and repeated so many times and in accordance with certain rituals, it would definitely enable the reader to behold the countenance of the promised Qa'im. This flared up the fire of his ever-growing longings. He began to practice an ascetic life with long prayers, successive days of fasting, and secluding himself from people and from the world. His parents and relatives never approved of such practices, nor did they permit him to continue his seclusion, which was contrary to their way of life and ambition. Such opposition could not be tolerated by a man like Ahmad, who was wholeheartedly searching and striving to reach his heart's desire, which was reunion with his eternal beloved. Therefore, one day early in the morning he made a small bundle of his clothes and belongings, and under the pretext of going to a public bath, departed from his father's home and set out on his way to search for God's manifestation. In a beggar's outfit, he roamed from village to village, and wherever he found a peer, meaning a spiritual leader, with great devotion and rectitude of conduct, he sat at his feet in the hope of finding a path to the mysterious world of truth. He invariably begged such people for the special prayer, the reading of which would draw him near to the court of his beloved. Whenever someone would suggest to him any practice, he was so ardent in his search that he would invariably carry out the instructions with absolute sincerity, no matter how time-consuming or arduous those practices were. But all of this was of no avail. Losing hope and faith in such pursuits, he made his way to India, a land so well known for its mystic teachers and hermits with special powers and spiritual gifts. He reached Bombay and took up residence there, still looking for someone to give him a glimpse of the glorious court of the Promised One. He heard that if one would perform a specific ablution, put on spotlessly clean white garments, prostrate oneself, and repeat the following verse of Quran, La ilaha illallah, there is no God but God, 12,000 times, he would definitely attain his aim and heart's desire. Not once, but several times Ahmad prostrated for hours to repeat the above verse 12,000 times, but still found himself in the darkness. In his dismay, he returned to Iran, but did not return to his hometown of Yazd. He settled in Kaushan, got married, and started his own craft of cloth making, in which he became an expert. In no time, he became a successful businessman, but still in his heart, he was searching. It was in Kaushan where the rumors about a person claiming to be the promised Qa'im were heard by him. Ceaseless, in his search, Ahmad asked many people in many different ways. No one ever gave him a clue. Then, one day, an unknown traveler arrived in Kaushan and stayed in the same inn where Ahmad had established his business. A certain inner urge drew Ahmad close to this stranger. In their conversation, Ahmad brought the subject of the rumor about the Qa'im. "Why do you ask such questions?" the traveler inquired. "I like to know if it is true," was Ahmad's response, "and if it is, I shall pursue it with all my might." The traveler, with a smile of triumph, instructed him to go to Mashhad and find a certain learned man called Mullah Abdul Khaliq, who would tell him the whole truth. The very next day, Ahmad was on his way to Mashhad. The owners of the neighboring shops were very much surprised when they found Ahmad not being in his shop as usual. What transpired between him and the unknown traveler? They asked one another, but no one had the right answer. Ahmad crossed deserts and mountains on foot, and his heart was overflowed with joy and longing. Every step he took, he found himself nearer to his reunion with his beloved. He reached Mashhad exhausted and so ill that he had to stay in bed. After 2 months, he mustered the last ounces of his strength and courage and went directly to the door of the desired house. Here are his own words. "When I reached the house, I knocked at the door, and the servant opened it. He asked, 'What do you want?' 'I must see your master,' was my answer. The servant went in, and Mullah himself came out. He admitted me to his house, and when I explained everything that happened to me, he grasped my arm and said, 'Do not say such things in this house,' and pushed me out of his house. My sorrows had no limit. Heartbroken and utterly astounded, I told myself, 'Are all my efforts in vain? To whom shall I turn?' But I was sure of one thing. I will never leave this man and will persist until he opens his heart to me and give me guidance. The next morning I was at the door of the same house. I knocked harder than the day before, and this time the mullah himself opened the door And the moment I saw him, I said, I will not go away until you tell me the whole truth. This time he found me earnest, and not there to spy or cause difficulties for him and his friends. He instructed Ahmad to attend the evening prayer at a certain mosque, which he led a congregational prayer followed by a sermon. Then he should follow Mullah. Ahmad followed the instructions, however, when the Mullah finished his sermon, he was surrounded by such a large crowd, which made it impossible for Ahmad to find him. The next day, when the two met again, Ahmad was instructed to go to another mosque at night, where a third person would show him the way. Ahmad was there at sunset, and as promised, after the evening prayer, a certain person came and beckoned him to follow. Without hesitation or fear, Ahmad followed. They were joined by the mullah and began to walk like shadows in the darkness of night through narrow streets of Mashhad. His resolve was unshaken. He took every step with great determination and was ready for any outcome. At last, they reached a certain house. The mullah knocked at the door very gently, and it was opened immediately, as if they were expected. They went in very quickly and passed through a covered passageway, reached a small courtyard, climbed a few steps, and were at the door of an upper chamber, where a dignified man was seated. The mullah approached him with absolute reverence and courtesy, and quietly said, "This man is the one I told you about," pointing to Ahmad, who was standing at the threshold. The host welcomed and invited Ahmad to come in. So he entered the room and sat down on the floor. The host was no less a person than Mullah Sadiq Khurasani, an early believer who in Shiraz received 1,000 lashes on his bare back, and along with Quddus and another believer, were paraded in the streets of Shiraz by a string pulled through a hole made in their noses. He had gone to Shiraz to attain the presence of the Bab, but was expelled from that city before the Bab returned from his pilgrimage and proclamation in Mecca. The host, Mullah Sadiq, was a very distinguished Babi, well known for his erudition, audacity, and steadfastness. During Baha'ullah's ministry, he displayed such zeal that Baha'ullah conferred upon him the title of Astagh, meaning the most truthful. Ahmad, now about 40 years old, who for 25 years had been wandering in the valley of search and had nowhere found even a drop to quench his thirst, found himself on the path to the main spring. Three sessions were sufficient, and he embraced the faith with all his heart and soul. So elated and overenthusiastic, he looked at Mullah Sadiq, advised him to calm down. He said, "Return to Kashan," and told him that he should not mention the faith to the people, not even to his own wife. You see, those days were the days of extreme danger to the newly born cause of God. Those who embraced the cause were forever the target of many atrocities. Even the air was imbued with suspicion, spying, and slander. Therefore, the believers had to be very careful. As I told you, Quddus and Mullah Sadiq and a third person were the first ones in the history of the faith who endured torture in the hand of the enemies. Mullah Sadiq, knowing how Ahmad had suffered, and realizing that he had no money, he gave him money and small gifts for his family, and again stressed wisdom and discretion. Commenting on his return to Kaushan, Ahmad recounts, "When I reached Kaushan, everyone asked what had happened that I left everything so abruptly. I told them, my longing for pilgrimage was too great to resist. And I was right." Here I wish to tell you that the city of Mashhad, where he met Mullah Sadr, is the holiest Islamic city in Iran, where the shrine of the 8th Imam is located, and people go there for pilgrimage. So his answer had double meaning. In Kaushan, he resumed his work, but longed to teach the faith. He heard rumors that a man in Kaushan by the name of Haji Mirza Jani changed his religion and had become the follower of a new and obscure religion. Ahmad searched for him, and when the two found each other, their joy had no bounds. They became constant companions and were the only two Babis in Kaushan. Mirza Jani had been converted by Mullah Hussein when he visited Kaushan on his way to Tehran to deliver the scroll from the Bab to Baha'u'llah. Here, with your permission, I will digress to a side story. The guards who were taking the Bab from Isfahan to Tehran had strict orders to bypass every village and town, and for disguise they replaced the Bab's green turban with a merchant's hat so no one would recognize him. It was the eve of Nowruz of 1847 when they were approaching Kaushan. The night before, Haji Mirza Jani dreamt that as he was standing by a certain gate of the city, he saw the Bab escorted by the guards were approaching. The Bab told Haji, "For next 3 nights, we will be your guest. Prepare yourself." He woke up, and though he had never seen the Bab, he considered it to be a true dream. He cleaned the house and prepared a room for the Bab. He went by the same gate, and to his surprise, his dream came true. As they approached, Haji went to kiss the Bab's stirrups, but the Bab prevented him and said the exact words heard in his dream. The guards thought he was an old friend of the Bab, and the chief guard had no objection for permitting the Bab to enter the city, but the other guards stubbornly resisted the idea of disobeying their strict orders. Finally, with persuasion of the chief, they consented. Haji wished to host the guard as well, but the Bab told him, "I alone will be your guest." During the visit, one day Haji went to Ahmad and with great excitement told him, "Would you like to behold the countenance of your Lord?" Ahmad became overjoyed and immediately arose and asked how and when. Haji broke the overwhelming news of himself hosting the Bab and invited Ahmad to his house. At the appointed hour, Ahmad arrived at Haji's house and beheld the countenance of the promised Qa'im for whom he had yearned all his life. He saw a young Sayyid sitting with such meekness, majesty, and grandeur, truly reflecting the light of God. Some of the divines and dignitaries of town were seated on the floor, and their servants stood at the door. One of the mullahs faced the Bab and said, "We have heard that a certain young man from Shiraz has claimed to be the Qa'im Is that true?
Yes, answered the Bab. Does he reveal verses too? Asked the Semullah. The Bab responded, We reveal verses too. Ahmad states, This clear answer was sufficient for anyone to find the whole truth, but the audience, and particularly that mullah, did not have a hearing ear. Then they served tea, and a cup was offered to the Bab, who took the cup, called the servant of the same mullah, and graciously gave it to him. Next day, the same humble servant came to Ahmad and deplored the stupidity of his master. With a little explanation about the station of the Bab, he embraced the cause, and the number of believers now grew to 3. At this juncture, I can't help but to digress again and tell you the story of conversion of the Muslims, supposedly by Baha'is or Babis serving tea, dates, and so on. Since so many Muslims became Babis and later on Baha'is, the clergy, ignorant of the truth of the faith, suspected tea served in firesides to be the factor. So, drinking of tea by Muslims in such gatherings was strictly forbidden by the so-called doctors of religion for the spiritual health of the Muslims. This remedy proved to be unsuccessful. If anything, the number of converts to the faith increased, a very serious and disappointing side effect. As simple as these firesides were, the believers used to serve dates. Being again blind to the real truth of the faith, the clergy concluded that it must be the dates. So it was added to the forbidden list. The final comedy was the statement of a high clergy in Tabriz at the presence of the Crown Prince Muzaffaruddin Mirza, the son of Nasruddin Shah. This was related by Varga the martyr. Varga had the knowledge of many sciences as well as he was a gifted poet. So the Crown Prince used to enjoy his company in various gatherings. In one of these gatherings, Varga states, This clergy got up and boasted about his new discovery about how Muslims become Baha'is. To the audience eager to hear about his masterpiece, he stated, I was prompted to do my research when we all realized that forbidding eating of dates has not cured the conversion problem. Now the audience is all ears. He said, Baha'is have made extract from dates and have made them in form of small pills. In their meetings, as their teachers speak and people's jaws drop, these speakers, like sharpshooters, using their fingertips, shoot the pills into the mouths of the innocent Muslims. Varga, after being granted permission by the Crown Prince to speak, deflated the clergy by stating, 1. He was a physician and knows of many extracts in pill forms but never had heard about extract of dates. 2. For a teacher to become a sharp pill shooter, it will take so much practice that there would be no time left to become an awe-inspiring speaker. And finally, even if all of the above is refuted, the act of swallowing the pill should be felt, but no one so far has mentioned it. The clergy boiled, but the crown prince was amused. No wonder Varga was not so popular among the clergy, and he, together with his 12-year-old son Ruhollah, drank the cup of martyrdom. Now we go back to the story of Ahmad. After the visit of the Bab, this nucleus of only 3 believers in Kashan began to grow. The rapid increase in the number of believers angered the divines, who used everything in their power to stop the flow. They instigated the cruel, ignorant mob to plunder, confiscate, and kill all those who bore the name of the Bab. Every day, they would go to a house, break its doors and windows, loot the contents, and destroy the building. In the evening, one would find the bodies of the believers in the streets, or even scattered over the neighboring mountains and the plains. This continued, and Ahmad's house was no exception. Ahmad had to hide in a draft tower where friends would take food to him. These draft towers, called Badgir, were common in that part of Iran to produce air current in summer. After spending 40 days in that tower and hearing that Baghdad has become the point of attraction, he decided to leave. Time-wise, we are about 6 years after the martyrdom of the Bab and in the midpoint of Baha'u'llah's stay in Baghdad. In the darkness of night, Ahmad came out of hiding and escaped by climbing the city wall on his way to Baghdad. As he traveled on foot, he came across another man traveling in the same direction. Both of them pretended that their destination was the holy city of Karbala. The subject of religion was never mentioned because of the fear of further molestation. On arrival in Baghdad, they separated, but soon they saw each other walking in the same direction on the streets of Baghdad, and the joyous surprise came when they found each other in the house of Baha'u'llah. It was a breathtaking experience for Ahmad to look at Baha'u'llah's countenance for the first time, a face full of charm, freshness with penetrating powers. Well, Ahmad was so overwhelmed, and he came to his senses only when he heard Baha'u'llah stating, "He becomes a Babi and then hides in the tower." Baha'u'llah allowed Ahmad to remain in Baghdad and have his residence near his. Ahmad immediately assembled his cloth weaving frame and went to work and was the happiest man on earth. What else does one expect? To live at the same time of the manifestation of God, adore Him, be loved by Him, and be so close to Him in heart, soul, and residence. When once asked about the events of the years he spent in such proximity to Baha'u'llah, with tears in his eyes, Ahmad said, "How innumerable and great were the events of those years. Our nights were filled with memorable episodes and days with joyful and at times sorrowful events. For example, one day, as the Blessed Beauty was walking with us behind him, a government officer approached him, stating that one of his followers had been murdered and his body was thrown by the river. Baha'u'llah replied, "No one has killed him, through 70,000 veils of light, we showed him the glory of God to an extent smaller than a needle's eye, and he could no longer bear the burden of his life, so he offered himself as a sacrifice. Another time, when the caliph's decree was conveyed to Baha'u'llah and he had to leave Baghdad for Istanbul, he left the city on the 32nd day after Nowruz for the Rizwan Garden. On that same day, after he crossed the river, it overflowed, but on the 9th day, it was possible for his family to join him. Then the river overflowed for the second time, and on the 12th day, it subsided, and all the people went to see him. Ahmad begged Baha'u'llah to be allowed to accompany him on his exile, but Baha'u'llah did not accept his request. He chose some followers and instructed the rest to remain and teach. He emphasized that this would be better for the faith. At the time of his departure, those who were left behind stood in a row, and all were so overcome with sorrow that they burst into tears. Baha'u'llah again approached and stating, "It is better for the cause of God. Some of these people who accompany me are liable to do mischief, therefore I am taking them with me." Then he mounted his horse, and one of the friends placed a sack of coins in front of the saddle, and Baha'u'llah started to give coins to the crying poor who were standing by. When they began to push one another, he plunged his hand in the sack and emptied the sack by pouring the coins on the ground, saying, "Gather them yourselves." Ahmad saw his beloved disappear from his sight, never to see him again in this mortal life. Very sad and distressed, he returned to Baghdad, which to him seemed to be devoid of any attraction. The sun was reaching its zenith in Adrianople. He tried to keep himself busy and happy by gathering the friends and encouraging them to disperse and teach the faith which just had been declared. Though actively serving the cause, he was not happy. After a few years, in 1865, Ahmad again left his home and work and set out on foot to Adrianople, the city of his love and desire. When he reached Istanbul, he received a tablet from Baha'u'llah, which is known to us as the Tablet of Ahmad. He describes receipt of this tablet in these words: "I received the tablet of the Nightingale of Paradise, and reading it over and over, I realized that my beloved desired me to go and teach his cause. Therefore, I preferred his wish above mine." Ahmad was specially commissioned to travel throughout Iran and give the glad tidings of Baha'u'llah's declaration to as many Babi families as he could find. Now you know why such glorious reference to the Bab in this tablet. The task was arduous beyond description, and therefore such exhortations as, "Be thou as a flame of fire to my enemies and a river of life eternal to my loved ones, and be not of those who doubt." The path to be walked by him was thorny and filled with tribulations, thus these comforting words: "And if thou art overtaken by afflictions in my path, or degradation for my sake, be not thou troubled thereby. to understand the meaning of sincerity in the following promise. By God, should one who is in affliction or grief read this tablet with absolute sincerity, God will dispel his sadness, solve his difficulties, and remove his affliction. One can find the answer in an earlier verse in the same tablet. In this earlier verse, the condition for Baha'u'llah's above promise is revealed in these exalted words. And be thou so steadfast in my love that thy heart shall not waver, even if the swords of the enemies rain blows upon thee, and all the heavens and the earth arise against thee. It means a believer can reach to such heights of certitude and faith that when facing martyrdom, his heart shall not waver, and that is the stage of absolute sincerity, which is achieved only by truly recognizing the station of Baha'u'llah. With this tablet in his possession, which was in the handwriting of Baha'u'llah, a tablet invested by Baha'u'llah with a special potency, and clad in the simple garment of a beggar, Ahmad made his way back to Iran. He entered the country through the province of Azerbaijan, where most of the captivity and eventual martyrdom of the Bab had taken place. He was like the breeze of life to many disheartened Babis in that area, and enabled them to see the sun then shining from Adrianople. Even many Muslims embraced the faith wholeheartedly. Ahmad became the embodiment of his own tablet. Such undaunted spirit, tenacity, and steadfastness, which were difficult to match. He would not easily give up, even when facing afflictions and degradations, but to return again and again to finish what needed to be done. For example, when traveling in the province of Khorasan, he went to the house of a well-known Babi family, the head of which was no less a person than Farughi, one of the survivors of the Tabarsi upheaval. Ahmad went in and gradually opened the subject in a frank and emphatic manner. He told them that the one promised by the Bab was none other than Baha'u'llah, who was then in Adrianople. Farughi, who had audaciously fought in Tabarsi, started to fight there too. The discussion became more intense, and as the hours went by, and in the heat of the discussion, Farughi punched Ahmad in the mouth and broke one of his teeth, and physically threw him out of his house. Ahmad left broken-hearted, but his resolve unshaken. He returned later and told them that he would not leave until the subject was fully discussed and concluded. We should bear in mind that in those days the Babis were in such danger that even a piece of paper with writings of the Bab was sufficient enough for the house to be demolished, the occupants sent to prison, or even to the executioner. Therefore, many of the believers did hide their books and writings in the walls of their houses or under the ground. When Ahmad went to Farughi's house for the second time, he said emphatically that the greatest name of Baha had often been mentioned by the Bab in his writings. Farughi challenged him, and to prove to Ahmad that he was wrong, he tore a part of the wall open and brought out a bundle containing the writings of the Bab, and promised not to say a word against the explicit text. Ahmad states, the very first one we opened referred to the name Baha. As promised by Farooqi, he and all of the members of his family accepted the faith of Baha'ullah and became overzealous defenders and outstanding in its propagation and protection. Farooqi is one of the 19 apostles of Baha'ullah, so designated by the Guardian. After covering the whole large province of Khorasan with its holy city of Mashhad, blessed 2 decades earlier by the footsteps of Quddus and Mullah Hussein, Ahmad decided to go once more to Baghdad and convey the message of love and greetings on behalf of Baha'ullah to all of his friends. Unfortunately, while on his way, he became ill and could not reach Baghdad. In addition to Tehran, some of the divines of Kashan recognized him and filed complaints against him at the court of the king Nasruddin Shah, who was ever ready to inflict hardship on the followers of the new faith. Ahmad was consequently arrested and committed to the hands of a young officer whose orders were to investigate the case, and if the victim proved to be a heretic, to put him to death at once. The young officer did not wish to kill Ahmad, so he tried to persuade Ahmad, of all people, to recant his faith. Ahmad states, I was at the height of my faith and enthusiasm, and even not for a moment the thought of recantation crossed my mind. He told the officer that he was not a Babi, but a Baha'i, meaning the follower of the Supreme Manifestation. He was kept in prison, and there he heard that a sudden and serious illness had struck the officer's wife. In extreme distress, the officer came to Ahmad and said, "Should my wife recover, I will release you." After 3 days, the young officer, heedless of severe consequences to himself, took Ahmad to the gate of Tehran and set him free. Now, if that intervention was not from the power behind the tablet, what else could it be? Free as a bird, he went to the nearby villages, where the Babis showed him hospitality, and in return he guided them to the right path. One source states that Ahmad resided in Kashan until his wife died. Then he went to the province of Fars, with Shiraz being its capital. He remained in Shiraz and lived in that province for about 20 years or more. He became the companion and comforter of the oppressed and the afflicted, which were many in that time, in view of never-ending persecutions. His humble abode was open to downtrodden as well as many travel teachers. One of the most touching incidents, as related by himself, is as follows. One day, a travel teacher, barely clad and barefoot, came to my door. He was truly exhausted, and his clothes were stiff and brownish with mixture of sweat and dust. He happened to be Haji Mirza Haydar Ali, surnamed by Abdul Baha, the Angel of Carmel. I fed him and asked him to go to rest while I wash his clothes and spread them in the sun to dry up. At evening, the friends were invited so they could come and meet this great believer and listen to his inspiring words. Many eventful years passed, and when again the wave of persecution spread all over Iran, Ahmad's life became in danger. The believers, full of love and admiration for Ahmad, suggested to him to leave that forsaken corner of the country at once and head for a more populated area. He was so well known that he could not be anywhere throughout the country without being recognized. After changing many residences, he decided to settle in Tehran, which had been the wish of his daughter for a long time. His daughter was married and had settled in Tehran for years. After having lived a century and always enjoying the good health, he passed away in 1905 in Tehran. He never wavered, nor was he ever anything but the flame of fire and a river of life eternal. That was his mandate and identity with which he passed on to the presence of his beloved. You might wonder what happened to the original tablet of Ahmad in the handwriting of Baha'u'llah, which Ahmad carried close to his heart all the time. The rest of the story might have the answer. From his first marriage in Kashan, Ahmad had two children, a son called Mirza Muhammad and a daughter, Khanum Gohar. When Ahmad's house was ransacked in Kashan, his son, who was married and had a five-year-old son, decided to take his family from Kashan to Tehran. The little boy's name was Jamal. On the way to Tehran, he and his wife died, and the little Jamal remained all by himself. The mule drivers who used to take food from provinces to Tehran, not knowing that Jamal was from a Baha'i family, took pity on the helpless boy, placed him on one of the loads, and took him to Tehran. In that large city, Jamal was all alone, until his aunt, Khanum Gohar, the daughter of Ahmad, arrived in Tehran. In process of searching for any trace of her brother and his family, luckily, she found Jamal. She and her husband raised Jamal until Ahmad came to settle in Tehran and took his grandson Jamal under his wings. Jamal grew to become an excellent Baha'i. His two most outstanding characteristics were iron determination and untiring energy. Towards the end of his life, Ahmad entrusted the original tablet to Jamal, his grandson, who in turn, out of the purity of his heart and devotion to the faith, offered it as a gift to Janabi Waliullah Varqa, the late hand of the cause and the trustee of Hughullah. Janabi Varqa was the son of Varqa the martyr, whose name was mentioned earlier, and the father of Janabi Ali Muhammad Varqa, the present hand of the cause and the trustee of Hughullah. Janabi Varqa, who had received the original tablet from Jamal, under the instruction of the guardian, attended the opening ceremony of the House of Worship in Wilmette in 1953. He brought with him this most precious tablet as his offering to the archives of the Baha'is of the United States. May you and I, the believers in these United States of America, who have the privilege of being the present trustees of such a potent tablet written by the pen of glory, be infused with the same vigor, fire, and love which infused and transformed its original trustee and bearer, the immortal Ahmad. I know you wanted to hear only the story behind the tablet of Ahmad and its recipient. Well, that was the main course. The menu will not be complete without saying a few words about Ahmad's glorious daughter, Khanam Gohar. Khanam Gohar was a very daring woman for her time and was blessed with a mirror-like pure heart. During the lifetime of Baha'u'llah, there were some outstanding teachers who were almost worshipped by the believers. One of them, who had so many exalted tablets from Baha'u'llah, often went to Khanam Gohar's house. She respected him to the point of cleaning his shoes. Such respect and adoration by the believers together with the tablets from Baha'u'llah went to the head of some of them who thought of assuming an independent rank in the cause. After the ascension of Baha'u'llah, one day this teacher visited Khanam Gohar, who as usual brought tea and sweets and stood at the door with folded arms in absolute humility. She noticed that the teacher was quite gloomy and bitter, so she asked for the reason. He said, "I must go to the Holy Land and see to the affairs of the cause myself. The faith is left in the hands of a young man." The last phrase was stated with indignation and pride. You like to know that when Baha'u'llah ascended, Abdu'l-Bahá was 48 years old. Khanam Gohar, contrary to the usual protocol, raised her voice and said, "Do you think Baha'u'llah did not know who to appoint after himself?" With these words, she took the refreshments away and ordered the arrogant man to leave her house and never come back. She warned all of the neighboring Baha'i families about his attitude and cautioned them to wait until they heard from Abdu'l-Bahá. It did not take too long before that man was cast out as a covenant breaker, and all who adored him abandoned him. What a miserable ending. As for the purity of her heart, this last story will give you an example. Khanam Gohar heard that a young girl belonging to a Baha'i family was seriously ill. She went by her bedside and prayed to God with these words, "Oh my God, I have had my share of life. Please, take me and leave this child for her parents." Well, that same night she died and the girl began to recover. A true daughter to that illustrious father. This was the moving and touching story of Ahmad, his family, and best of all, the tablet which was revealed in his honor, but truly was for the whole world. He used to call it the tablet of the nightingale of paradise, and not realizing that the Baha'i world for years to come will know it as the tablet of Ahmad. This tape was recorded on this Nowruz day of 1994, the day of Baha, in the month of Baha, the Baha'i year 151. The following recitation of the tablet of Ahmad will be accompanied by the chanting of the same tablet in Arabic by the well-known Persian Baha'i singer, Mrs. Ahdiyeh Pakravan. I wish to offer my deep appreciation for her gracious authorization for the reproduction of her beautiful and inspiring recorded chant.
هو السلطان العليم الحكيم.
He is the king, the all-knowing, the wise.
هذه برقة الفردوس تغني على أفنان سدرة البقوم بألهم قدس مليم. ما تبشر المخلصين إلى جوار الله.
Lo, the nightingale of paradise singeth upon the twigs of the tree of eternity with holy and sweet melodies, proclaiming to the sincere ones the glad tidings of the nearness of God.
والسلام من نبع اللوح الملك العزيز الفريد. متحت المحبين الإله.
Calling the believers in the divine unity to the court of the presence of the generous one. Informing the severed ones of the message which has been revealed by God the King, the Glorious, the Peerless.
وبه يقتل الحق الباطل ويفرغ كل أمر حكيم. قل إنه لشجر الروح الذي يثمر.
Guiding the lovers to the seat of sanctity and to this resplendent beauty. Verily, this is that most great beauty foretold in the books of the messengers, through whom truth shall be distinguished from error, and the wisdom of every command shall be tested. Verily, he is the tree of life that bringeth forth the fruits of God, the exalted, the powerful, the great.
قل إنه لسلطان الرسول.
Oh, Muhammad, bear thou witness that verily he is God, and there is no God but him, the King, the Protector, the Incomparable, the Omnipotent, and that the one whom he had sent forth by the name of Ali was true one from God, to whose commands we are all conforming. Say, O people, be obedient to the ordinances of God, which have been enjoined in the Bayan by the Glorious, the Wise One.
ومن شاء فليتخذ إلى ربه سبيلا. قل يا قوم إن تكفروا بهذه الآيات فبأي حجة آمنتم بالله من قبل هاتوا بها يا من الكاذبين لا فوالذي نفسي
Verily, he is the king of the messengers, and his book is the mother book. Did ye but know? Thus doth the nightingale utter his call unto you from this prison. He hath but to deliver this clear message. Whosoever desireth, let him turn aside from this counsel, and whosoever desireth, let him choose the path to his Lord. O people, if ye deny these verses, by what proof have you believed in God? Produce it, O assemblage of false ones. Nay, by the one in whose hand is my soul, they are not and never shall be able to do this, even should they combine to assist one another.
وَيَمْنَوْكَ كُلُّ مَنْ فِي السَّمَوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِينَ وَكُنْكَ شُعْلَةَ النَّارِ لَأَدَائِي وَكُوسَرِ الْبَغَاءِ لِأَحِبَّائِي
O Ahmad, forget not my bounties while I am absent. Remember my days during thy days, and my distress and banishment in this remote prison. And be thou so steadfast in my love that thy heart shall not waver, even if the swords of the enemies rain blows upon thee, and all the heavens and the earth arise against thee. Be thou as a flame of fire to my enemies and a river of life eternal to my loved ones, and be not of those who doubt. And if thou overtaken by affliction in my path or degradation for my sake, Be not thou troubled thereby. Rely upon God, thy God, and the Lord of thy fathers. For the people are wandering in the paths of delusion, bereft of discernment to see God with their own eyes, or hear his melody with their own ears. Thus have we found them, as thou also dost witness. Thus have their superstitions become veils between them and their own hearts, and kept them from the path of God, the Exalted, the Great. Be thou assured in thyself that verily he who turns away from this beauty hath also turned away from the messengers of the past, and showeth pride towards God from all eternity to all eternity. Learn well this tablet, O Ahmad. Chant it during thy days, and withhold not thyself therefrom. For verily, God hath ordained for the one who chants it the reward of 100 martyrs and a service in both worlds. These favors have been bestowed upon thee as a bounty on our part, and a mercy from our presence, that thou mayest be of those who are grateful. By God, should one who is in affliction or grief read this tablet with absolute sincerity, God will dispel his sadness, solve his difficulties, and remove his afflictions. Verily, he is the merciful, the compassionate. Praise be to God, the Lord of all the worlds.
لمن السالكين.